From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a bustling Rochester street, where the residents say they consider themselves family. There are fruit trees, thriving businesses, even an international jazz scene. I'm talking about Clarissa Street, but the scene I just described represented the neighborhood decades ago, before institutional racism, gentrification, and redlining changed the area. Throughout the past year, a group of local teens and longtime Clarissa Street residents have been working to understand and capture the area's history. Youth history ambassadors from Teen Empowerment have been collecting oral histories of Clarissa Street elders. You heard about the project last year right here on this program. And now, the ambassadors are gearing up to present what they've learned in a new documentary. It's called Clarissa Uprooted: Youth and Elders Uncover the Story of Black Rochester. It will be screened virtually through the Little Theater next Friday. This hour, we get a preview with our guests. Tashiana Williams is a Teen Empowerment Youth History Ambassador and a rising 10th grader at School of the Arts. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us. Are you there, Tashi?
I am.
There we've got Tashiana Williams. Joan Coles Howard, founding member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee and a former resident of Clarissa Street. Joan, welcome. How are you?
I'm well, Evan. Thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm good. In a moment, we're going to make a connection with Shantara Randall, who's lead coordinator of this project and, of course, works with Teen Empowerment. We'll get Shantara in just a second. But I'm going to start with Tashiana Williams and ask you to tell us.
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear? Is that Tashiana?
That's Shantara.
Oh, I've got Shantara. Do we have Tashiana as well?
Yes.
We do. We've got all three of you. It's great to have all three of you. Shantara, why don't you start by telling our guests what the mission is here? I mean, I recall the conversation a year ago. It feels like a different world pre-COVID. But what this mission has been all about in creating this documentary and doing the work that that the teens have been doing with the elders. Tell us all about this, Shantara.
So initially, it's so funny because it just started out as an opportunity to really build intergenerational relationships and connections between the elders and the young folk in the community, and also to have young people actually be able to perform and have their own stage at the Clarissa Street reunion. Now, out of that, it evolved into something so much larger, I think, that none of us could have imagined. We realized that there was all of this history pertaining to Clarissa Street, the Third Ward, and Rochester in general that many people did not know about. And so we felt that it was really important to really collect the stories of the elders within our community, how they were very resilient, how they resisted, how they fought for equality, equity, and justice within their own communities, and to pass that fire and that torch down to the young people. So this documentary that we're working on right now is really about listening to the elders tell the story of how they were literally uprooted from their community, how many of them resisted that uprooting, and some of them still live in that community, and what young people need to be doing now to continue the fight for change, equity, and equality.
Shantara, I know you're a social studies and special education teacher at Monroe High School, and teaching is your specialty. How much have you learned yourself through this project?
Oh, my goodness. I learned so much. I actually made it a part of my thesis for my master's degree because I was like, I don't know this history. I didn't know this history of Rochester. And so I went to my professors my last semester, which was the COVID semester, and was like, I really want to do my project, my thesis on Clarissa Street, the history, economic development for Black Rochester after 1950. And so I've learned so much, and I've taken what I've learned, and I've given it to my students because I teach African-American lit. And so when we talk about Frederick Douglass, we always read Frederick Douglass's autobiography. I talked about him going to church right in the Clarissa Street area. I talk about him producing his newspaper right in the Clarissa Street area. and all of those connections from then until now. So I've learned, oh my God, I can't even explain how much I've learned through this project.
And you're going to get a chance to use that in your work. Tomorrow would have been the 25th Clarissa Street reunion. It is being rescheduled to 2021. In-person classes are being rescheduled to who knows when. By the way, were you surprised by that, Shantara, the move to start the school year entirely online for the city of Rochester?
No, I mean, as an educator and as a parent, we just want it to be safe. We want our children to be safe. So I wasn't for going back to school in person at all because I want to protect my son. I want to protect myself. I want to protect my students. So I wasn't shocked at all.
Okay, talking to Shantara Randall from Teen Empowerment, also a teacher at Monroe High School, helping lead this remarkable project. Tashiana Williams, a youth ambassador, youth history ambassador for TE and a rising 10th grader at School of the Arts. Can you give me a sense for how much you've learned working on this project, Tashiana?
Working on this project, I didn't, know about Rochester at all. So, this project let me help learn about the Christie area in my own neighborhood and, how it affects the things we do today and how we live today and, I never knew all this stuff, and it just helps me realize why we do the stuff we do and why there are certain circumstances in Rochester. And I just wish everyone could learn about Rochester and the history.
Well, in a second, speaking of history, Joan Coles Howard's family has phenomenal stories to tell, and we're going to do that in just a second. But I think it's important to point out here that the documentary we're talking about, Friday, 1 week from today, August 21st, the Little Theater can't show you movies in the Little Theater, but the Little is doing a lot. And I hope that you're staying in touch with us at thelittle.org, the virtual Little Theater, next Friday, the 21st at 6:30 p.m. is going to be screening this doc. And there will be an in-person drive-in screening on the visual study workshop lawn. And that's in a couple Wednesdays from now. Wednesday, August 26th. At 7:30 p.m. to check this all out. So those are a couple events to flag on your calendar. And Shantara, I think there might be an assumption that because of COVID, the TE ambassadors, the youth, they had to stop this project. They can't do any performance. They can't do the interviews. Does not sound to me like COVID has derailed the work here.
Oh, no. We worked really diligently to make sure that young people's voices were still heard through this project. We're actually pre-recording all of their performances at different locations in the Third Ward about why those locations are important and how it relates to them. We pre-recorded all of those, so those will also be shown throughout the rest of the week as teasers, but also on the night of the virtual screening. We've been meeting over Zoom, have them sit. I mean, it's the worst. It's not the best, but having them sit for 4 hours over Zoom to plan out, to write, to think about how to do interviews. We've been conducting our interviews over Zoom. So we worked really diligently to make sure that this project still went on and that the work could still be done.
I think your students, both at Monroe High School and the youth ambassadors at TE, Shan, are going to come out of this pandemic knowing they can do anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so many lessons here. And Joan Coles Howard, a founding member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee, former resident of Clarissa Street. Really, the whole family story should be told. Joan, I want to ask you, how do you feel about what Teen Empowerment is trying to do here to make sure this history is known and shared and appreciated, not just sort of in the context of Clarissa Street, but kind of telling a story of Rochester that, as you heard Shantara say, a lot of people may not be engaged with anymore?
Exactly. I am just astounded by the interest of the teens and the effort and energy that they put into it and the research. And it is a story that needs to be told. We were a village and it got disrupted. And a lot of people are not aware of that. They don't know that. And so the teens are bringing it to life. They have inspired me. It's incredible. And it's made me very happy.
Joan, when you say we were a village and we were disrupted, take our listeners through what you mean by that.
Well, as they'll see in the documentary, with the elders, many elders, and we all spoke about the same thing, that we didn't need to leave our neighborhood. We had businesses. We had cleaners and grocery stores and bars and barbershops, and we had everything we needed, centers to play, a pool hall. It was just wonderful. We had music, all kinds of music, jazz on one end, R&B on the other, and we didn't have to go anywhere. It was a village, and that was taken away from us when the gentrification happened. And it's sad, because that was a great beginning for us, and we were happy, and it was just a totally different time. There's so many factors of it that you can talk about. That I mean, even now what we're facing with the protests and George Floyd, the police knew us. They knew us by name. And then I think they had to live in the neighborhood in order to work in the neighborhood. And they would tell us, get out of the street. We'd play hopscotch in the street. And they'd say, get out of the street, Joan, or I'm going to tell your mother. I can't imagine that happening now. So that kind of thing, yes. We were a village.
Joan, everybody's got a few moments of childhood or sort of maybe a regular place that you went, an event, an image in your mind. When you think of your childhood, what comes to mind first?
Church. My father took me to a different church every Sunday. He was the editor of the Frederick Douglass Boys newspaper. He published it for 60 years. And in order to stay in touch with the community, that was one of the things just one of the things that he did on a regular basis. We'd go to a different church every Sunday. And some of them I have memories. They scared me. Some are more verbal than others. And that is truly the first thing that comes to my mind. The second thing I think would be the parades we used to have on the street. And I got lost once and my mother spanked me, but because I followed the parade. So those kinds of things, childhood memories, that watching people dance at the club across the street from where I lived. Those are the kinds of things I don't think these children have nowadays. Yeah. These teens don't have that.
What was the club? What was the music scene like?
Well, we had the Pith Odd at Troop in Clarissa. That was jazz, and it was called the Chitlin Circuit. And musicians came to play from everywhere. I mean, major names that you would understand, and you'll see those again. You'll see those in the documentary. That was at Troop in Clarissa. And then at Bronson in Clarissa was the Ruse, and that was a bar, and people would come and dance. My favorite thing was to watch them dance. They would dance to Lloyd Price, and that was R&B. So, yeah, it was we had it.
Yeah, you did have it. The music scene was, for anybody who's doubting what Joan's talking about, legit and known, not just known in Rochester. This was a scene.
Oh, yes.
It was a scene. So again, though, for listeners who are going, well, how did we lose all this? Why did this fall apart? What's the way that you describe for people who don't understand what was lost and why it was lost, John?
It was plain and simple gentrification. They wanted to do the freeway or throughway or whatever, 490, I guess, and we didn't matter, so they just did it. They uprooted us. We had to move. People had to move from there to other areas. We only had really blacks on two sides of town, mainly. I mean, there were others, but mainly 7th Ward and 3rd Ward. And we had to move. I don't know how any other way to put it. They uprooted us. We had no place that we could stay there. And so that meant you had to go.
And when you say they uprooted us, who are you primarily thinking about when you say they?
Well, I guess I'm older now, and so some things are not as fresh in my mind.
Sure.
But I tend to think it must have been a decision by the city, the government of our city, governing people of our city. And then they the houses that were left, they reduced the cost on them, and a lot of people bought houses at reduced rates. And that's what Cornhill is, really, now.
What do you remember most about your dad?
It, he was dedicated. He believed that life could be better for all of us, and he set about doing that. And he was gone a lot. He loved me, and he took me with him for a lot of these places. He worked in every field that you can think of. He ran for political office. I think he may have been the first Black to do that. He said he ran. He said he never won, but he said he ran for everything but dog catcher, just to prove that it could be done. He helped people find jobs. He worked with the banks. He got a real estate license so he could help them buy houses. Shane Wiegand is doing research on, he's a teacher, and he's doing research on redlining. And that definitely involves my dad and what he was doing. And he's done a lot of the research from my father's collection, which is at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. So it's hard to describe because he was so huge in my mind and in the city, really. He was just involved in everything.
I just love having these conversations. And you hear Joan's descriptions of life, and they're so vivid. Tashiana, you had a chance to interview Joan.
She was great, by the way.
I have no doubt. What was it like for you? What did those conversations mean for you, Tashiana, and what did you take away from them?
The interview was like one of the best interviews I've ever done. Like, it's like having her tell us the stories about what happened in Rochester and what happened in her life makes it seem like, what are we doing today? Like, what are youth doing today, and how our youth could have been like that, or how can we make it better for ourselves? And like, just like comparing her stories to like what we learned about Pusher Street area just made it come to life.
Well, that old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. There is a lot that has changed with Clarissa Street and what has been lost there. And I think that's why this documentary is so valuable. And, you know, Joan, when you say you grew up and you knew some police officers' names and they knew your name, and they'd say, Joan, stop doing hopscotch in the street. We're going to tell your mother. And you had those personal relationships. Did you grow up distrusting the police at all?
No, not at all.
Tashiana, do you trust the police?
I do not.
Joan, does that break your heart to hear that?
Absolutely. It's wrong. It's just wrong. And D.D. Williams, I believe her last name is Williams, D.D. said it in the article in the DNC that the life now, this is not normal. And it's not.
Well, in the documentary, which is, again, a powerful look at Clarissa Street and the surrounding area's history in Rochester, one of the most compelling things we heard very early on in the film is two of the teen empowerment members' characterization of their city. Yes. One member called it broken. Another said he was afraid he won't make it to adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, does that break your heart to hear kids talk about that? Yeah.
Yes. It makes me cry. That shouldn't be. We're more than that. We deserve more than that. And for this to be 2020, and in a lot of ways, I feel like we're reliving the 60s. You know, didn't we already do this?
That's such a powerful point. And I think in so many ways, that's the story of Joan and her family. You know, Shantara, Joan and her dad and the work that he did with banks and helping people who needed that guidance and help, especially in a system that was preying upon Black people and dispossessing African-American families and individuals of property and wealth. I mean, there was so much work that people like Howard Coles were doing, that the people in this community were doing. What does it feel like to you, Shantara, to hear these kind of conversations between Tashiana and Joan and to hear Joan say, we did this 6 decades ago. How are we doing this? I mean, how does that hit you as a history, as someone who's immersed in this, Shan?
I think what you'll hear our young people quote a lot, they'll quote Kwame Ture, and they say, you know, the worst thing that somebody can do is not control your history, but control the understanding of it. And I think that is so important for young people to understand what's happening. When the Black Lives Matter uprising occurred on May 30th, the only individuals that were surprised that it was happening were individuals who don't know the history of Rochester. I think last year, even Joan said in the documentary, we asked the question, do you think something like that July 64 can happen again? And her reply was, yes. And we see that it did. It did happen again. And so when you can connect that history and understand how to use history as a tool of revolution, as a tool to fight, as a tool to promote change and promote justice, and not as something that is dead and in the past, you can inspire people with history. And so when I hear the conversations and the dialogue between Joan and Tashiana, I understand the importance of learning history, the importance of building connections between young folk and our elders. Because when you know about Joan's dad and how he fought, when you know about Charles T. Lunsford and how he fought and Dr. Walter Cooper and how they fought, you understand how important it is for us to keep fighting. And though it is sad that we have to keep fighting, it is completely necessary. And I think what we've seen as of recent and as of late is that we are not going anywhere. We are going to keep fighting. We're going to keep speaking out. We're going to keep advocating for change within our city. We won't be silent. Kwame Ture also said that our ancestors ran, and our generation is tired. We are not running anymore. And so I think everybody needs to be aware of that. We're going to keep fighting until change comes. And that is the importance of history.
Well, and let me ask you and Tashiana about that comment that I mentioned from the documentary, Shantara. When you've got one of the members of TE saying he's afraid he's not going to make it to adulthood, that is an indictment of many, many things. But it ultimately, it just hurts to hear kids say that. That's not to say that I blame anybody for feeling that way. I mean, these are people you work with. This is the future that you guys are helping mold. And I've said on this program many times, I am deeply moved by what teen empowerment does. I don't know that I have found another organization that, I mean, this is going to be kind of a clunky way to describe it, but it's just as real. And, you know, it's not about sort of PR and spin. It's doing the work with people who want to do the work but need the hand, need the opportunity, but are still worried about their own futures. And, Shan, when you hear someone say, I'm not sure I'm going to make it to adulthood, what do you think?
I want to say that I am not surprised. It is something that I hear almost at least two or three times a year from an African-American person or a Latinx person, that they're just happy that they can make it to whatever age that they are. And I think that there are so many factors that play into that. I mean, we have to look at the policies, look at the police department, look at all of the things that affect our young people on a day-to-day basis. The reality is, like, young people didn't wake up and say, this is how I want my community to be. They didn't create the environment in which they live in. That environment was created before them, and it was created strategically and on purpose. And we have to always be mindful of that. And the only way to fix that is to listen to their cries, listen to their anger, listen to their frustrations, and change the policies that oppress them, subjugate them, and put them in danger and at risk. And so when we think about our educational system, we think about our justice system, we think about all of our municipalities. We think about the people who work for the city. Where do they live? Many of them don't even live in a city. Therefore, all of that money, that taxpayer pay, it goes away from us. So we don't have the resources. We can't afford to get the resources that we need. We have to evaluate those systems, and we have to change them.
Before we hear from some other members, let me just close with Tashiana and Joan. And Tashiana, for you growing up in Rochester, do you feel like the leaders of government care about you and care about your peers?
I can honestly say I don't think so, because when it comes down to Black students or students in general, we're always put last. Our opinions are always put to the side. And the reality is that we are the future, so we have the ability to control the future. So our opinions are valid. Our opinions do matter. And, like, for them to be pushed aside, it's very discouraging and puts us in a bad place.
Tashiana, I do want to say I think the work that you're doing is educating people like me, and it's helping connect a city that feels, I think, increasingly disconnected. It's really important, and I am moved by the work that you did there. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us, Tashiana.
Thank you.
Joan Coles Howard, before I let you go, do you find yourself now nostalgic for the Rochester you grew up in, or are you more optimistic for the future of Rochester that your descendants will grow up in?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say more nostalgic, yeah, because it was, as I said, it was everything we needed. And this world now is so disjointed partly because of technology, which is good and bad.
Yeah.
So, no, I like the way it was better. We were a family, and we loved each other, and we weren't killing each other, and we weren't trying to hurt each other, and that was a good thing.
I hope
we need to regroup and do some more of that.
I hope the TE team, the Teen Empowerment team, has given you that hope for the future, though, too.
Absolutely. They absolutely have. They have renewed my faith in me, my people, history, just everything. And I am so happy to have met them, and they know I love them.
Joan, it is a gift for me to be able to talk to you and to learn your family story. Thank you for making time for the program, and here's all the good wishes for you and your family. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Evan. I appreciate it.
Joan Coles Howard is a founding member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee, former resident of Clarissa Street. And listeners, tomorrow would have been the Clarissa Street Reunion, the 25th. They're going to do that in 2021. But there's still so much going on. Teen Empowerment has been working on essentially a historical research project with teenagers, meeting and talking and interviewing people like Joan and hearing these stories, seeing all kinds of visual evidence and understanding what their city used to be in certain places and what changed that, the forces that changed that, and what that might portend for the future, but also what to understand about the present moment here. There is a documentary that you can see they have put together about all of this, and the Little Theater is going to be proud to show that to you in a virtual screening 1 week from today, Friday, August 21st, 6:30 p.m. at the virtual Little. Can't go to the Little in person yet, but online at thelittle.org. That screening is going to happen next Friday at 6:30, and you'll also have a chance for an in-person drive-in screening. That's going to happen at the Visual Studies Workshop's lawn on Wednesday, August 26th at 7:30. That's two Wednesdays from now. On the other side of this break, we're going to meet more of the Youth History Ambassadors and another longtime member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee on the other side.
I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections, a new report from researchers at Yale shows how racial covenants and racist property agreements have created segregation in Monroe County. Our guests discuss the history of those covenants, the impact they've had on communities, and how to undo their effects. Then in our second hour, could or should Rochester have a publicly owned bank? Our guests explore the issue. Talk to you Monday.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Shantara Randall stays with us. She's lead coordinator of the Clarissa Street Reunion Youth History Ambassadors Project at Teen Empowerment. She's a social studies and special education teacher at Monroe High School. I want to welcome Nino with us. Nino's Teen Empowerment Youth History Ambassador, a rising 11th grader at Wilson Commencement High School. I think it's Ninoshka. Nino, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I want to make sure. Can you pronounce your name for me? Because I want to do that correctly.
You said it right. It's Ninoshka.
And pronounce your last name for me.
Irizarry.
Irizarry. Nino Irizarry is with TE and had a chance to do some of this work as well. Nino, why don't you tell me about what you've been working on for this project?
I have been working on finding the connection between Black and Brown history, and it is so much. It has opened my eyes, and I'm so proud to be working with Teen Empowerment.
Well, we've got a chance to bring in another longtime member of the Clitzer Street Reunion Committee who's been helping have these conversations, these interviews, and the education of these youth leaders. A former resident of Clarissa Street is George Fontenette, who's back with us. I always love talking to the Fontenettes. George, how are you?
I'm doing well, Evan. How are you?
Well, I'm good. And, you know, this is sort of a poignant hour, but a powerful one for us who are still learning. And, you know, it was about a year ago when we were talking about this project, this ambitious project for the youth ambassadors to learn, to interview, to put together this documentary. How much do you think that they have gained from this work in the last year, George? I mean, it powerful stuff to me. What are you seeing?
Well, I missed the first part of the show, and I don't know if it was mentioned, but I want to congratulate the Teen Empowerment for winning the 2020 Matchstick Prize. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, and Shantara, you want to elaborate on that?
So we were chosen. It's so funny because all of the organizations that made it into like the top five, I was just like, these are amazing organizations throughout Rochester, and so we're just really, really honored to have won that award. So yeah, so thank you to just everyone, and I know Teen Empowerment is really, really proud. So.
Well, George, you know, we know about a little bit about your history. We had a conversation last year, and but I want to ask you what I asked Joan. When you think back to your childhood, what's the first memory that comes to mind for you?
Well, my childhood was basically living on and around Clarissa Street. I was born and raised on Favor Street, which is off of Truth Street, which Truth runs into Clarissa. And I was fortunate enough to have grandparents who owned a business called The Lots Tavern. And then my aunt owned Stamps Cleaners. My aunt and uncle owned Stamps Cleaners. And my other uncle owned Gibson Hotel, one of the first black hotels in Rochester. So my memory goes back to that, and I spent a lot of time on Clarissa, and as a matter of fact, I still do ride up and down there at least two or three times a week because I still attend the Immaculate Conception Church, which is in the Cornhill area now, on which is now Frederick Douglass Boulevard.
Well, you graduated from Madison High School in 1964, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, just a few months later, it's the July 1964. People still refer to them sometimes as the riots, but in the documentary, film director Carvin Eisen is talking to Teen Empowerment members, and he says it really was a rebellion. How did you view it, George?
Yeah, well, I was at the age when it happened that I was too young to really understand what was going on. So when it started, I was right there when it started, and I was, you know, wouldn't say a participant, but I was I seen all the action, and I was around all the action. And to this day, I know there's people who know more about it than I did, how it started, why it started. And I think the purpose of it was great, but to be honest with you, I really can't dig down deep to find out what the true meaning of it was. But as I grew older and read more about it, I understand and I understood the reasons.
Well, and now the reason I ask is here we are in 2020. It has been a powerful movement spring and summer with the killing of George Floyd and the massive demonstrations and movement that have come, not just, of course, from George Floyd's death, but also a movement that has been started and moving for years now. Mm-hmm. But that has culminated in marches, demonstrations, calls for change, interaction with government, some policy changes already. Do you see connections to 64? I mean, how do you feel about what you've seen this summer?
Well, yeah, I see the connection to the fact where I remember when urban renewal was coming through, because I hear my parents talking about it, because my father owned a corner grocery store, and they said that either you'll have to move your store somewhere and we'll find you a place, or you have to sell and take the money and run. And like I said, I lived around the corner, so they came through, and we had to move out. My parents ended up moving back to Louisiana in 1963, and we rented out the store until it was sold. So the uprooting that happened was, you know, it was kind of unbelievable to a child at my age, because I think I was like 15 years old or 16 years old during that time. And so I could always remember my parents called it urban removal, not urban renewal.
Yeah. So, George, that's one of those terms, urban renewal, that has a nice sort of sound to it, a nice packaging to it. And and for those of us who didn't grow up and live through it, you know, if you don't have a good, clear education in it, you might hear, oh, that sounds nice, urban renewal.
Yeah.
Urban removal is how you think of it now, huh?
Right, sort of. You know, and then I was sitting around the table. My cousin was in politics, Connie Mitchell. And so, you know, the family always got together. I would hear them talk, and I would listen to them. But like I said, I wasn't really privy to a lot that was going on.
Talking to George Fontanet, who grew up on and around Clarissa Street and a longtime member of the Clarissa Street Reunion Committee, a former resident of Clarissa Street. Nino, what stands out the most to you when you think about the history that you've been learning about and helping put together for not only this documentary, but for this project that has a lot of different faces to it? What stands out the most to you, Nino?
What stands out the most to me is a lot of things, but the most is that there's this big connection where black and brown people connect, and it's really not spoken about because there's a lot of people that, you know, they'd be like, oh, we so different, we don't got no connection, and that is so wrong. There's such a big connection that happened, and that has been stood out to me because I didn't even know none of this, and once I started working with Teen Empowerment, I just found out so many things about my own culture that I didn't even know.
Talking to Ninoshka Irizarry, who is with Teen Empowerment as a youth history ambassador and the project coordinator for TE, is Shantara Randall. Shantara, when you think about the summer of 1964 in Rochester and what we've experienced this spring and summer following the killing of George Floyd, you know, it's certainly not a perfect parallel, but I wonder if you see some similarities and if you see this summer's events bringing actual change.
I think that when in the aftermath of the rebellions and the uprisings, and we see the fires and the looting, I think many people are really emotionally connected to it, and they have they try to condemn it or condemn the individuals involved in it. They don't understand what we get out of doing things like that. We're only hurting ourselves. But if we go back to July 64 and we look at what occurred after the rebellion, which was sparked by an act of police brutality, it opened up dialogue between the community and public officials and city officials. So all of a sudden in the past, the African American community was practically ignored and caged in, boxed in. Now, after the rebellion in 1964, they have the ear. They want to hear the voice of the people. And I think something is similar is happening now. And I would even encourage and advocate that city officials listen to the people, listen to the community, and hear what they have to say and hear their demands and act upon it. It does create change. Sometimes things are a little ugly, but the ugliness oftentimes gives way to something beautiful. And that is what we're hoping for right now.
Talking to Shantara Randall from TE. George, do you see it that way? Do you see this summer with hope in your mind about what is it this is going to produce?
Yes, I think there is hope now. Years ago, you didn't see these kind of things happening. When you see in protests, you see mostly protests with African Americans or with the African American leadership. But now you see different groups, white groups, gay groups, they're all joining in, you know, for one purpose, to, you know, go against police brutality and to see that the change comes about.
Let me get a phone call from Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich. Hi, Rich. Go ahead. You on mute, my friend? He might be. Or it might be us. Here's what I'm going to do, Rich. I'm going to put you on hold because I can't hear you if you're talking. So we're going to see if we can get back on the line with Rich. We'll have producer Megan Mack jump on with you to make sure you're there. And we'll bring in Rich's phone call in just a second. And while we do that, Shantara, remind listeners what you want them to know about how they can see the documentary, experience so much of what TE has been working on here.
We will be streaming the documentary live on the 21st at 6:30 p.m. You can tune in again through the Little Theater's Facebook page. We will also be doing a live drive-in screening at VSW on the 26th, where there will also be live performances from the young people talking about the connections between the past and now and what they have learned for this project. It's so important that we learn the history of Rochester, because Rochester has such a rich history, even beyond Clarissa Street, that we oftentimes don't know about. And so I feel like if this is the start of preserving history within Rochester pertaining to people of color. And so I really want you all to tune into that and watch the hard work that the young people and the elders have done to make this happen.
Yeah, again, it's a couple ways to do that. TheLittle.org is the website for the Little Theater. That virtual screening next Friday, 6:30 p.m. Also, the Little's Facebook page. A really great opportunity for you to see this kind of work and to maybe find these connections and to see some of an important part of Rochester history that, because of urban renewal, or as George has been saying, maybe urban removal, has changed things. George, how much do you think there is a change in just the spirit of community? And by that, I mean, you know, Joan had a lot to say in the last half hour about growing up. You know, for a while in her childhood, she knew some police officers by name. They knew her by name. It was a, you know, it was a decently cordial relationship. She understands why that doesn't really exist today, and she's got real concerns about that. But she said so many neighbors knew each other's names. It just felt different, and I wonder if you agree with that, George.
Well, yeah, to a certain extent, yeah. I, as you said earlier, I attended Madison High School in the 60s. During that time, Madison was virtually probably 50-50, black, white. During that time, most of the black kids lived on the what I would call the Epworth side of the school. And we would come in through that door, and the white kids mostly lived on the other side, and they came in through the Wooden Street side. So we were more or less, we got along. We talk about it all the time when we have our class reunions, how we got along pretty good during that time. It wasn't a lot of upheavals that were going on at Madison, for instance, during the early 60s. And I think as time went by, in the late 60s, it changed. But going back to what you said about the police officers, yes, we knew. As a matter of fact, I had personal friends who were police officers, and everybody knew their name. And, you know, we kind of got along a lot better. And, you know, the old saying, you used to see the police walk the beat, and, you know, and they would frequent the establishments that were around Clarissa Street. So, you know, we got along, I thought, a lot better with the policemen during that time than what is going on today.
How did that change, George?
You know, I don't know. It had to be with the uprooting of people and the migration of newer people coming in, and the younger generation being more aware of what is going on here and paying more attention probably than we were.
Nino, can I ask you, as a rising 11th grade student in Rochester, do you trust police?
No.
Can you tell me about why not?
Personally, I had a situation with police officers where they took my uncle and we followed them, thinking they're going to take him to a police station. Turned out they were going to take him to a private location that they had. And we didn't see the sign that said, do not enter, because it was really dark. And once we went to the private area, a lot of police surrounded us, and my family doesn't really speak English. I was trying to talk to the police officers, and they were just screaming at my dad's face, being really disrespectful, saying a lot of disrespectful things. And ever since then, I don't trust police, because every time I just think about how they were really, they didn't even give my dad the chance to speak and everything. The whole situation just lost my whole respect towards them.
Shantara, what's it going to take to change this relationship among, you know, kids soon to be adults like Nino, like Tashiana, and police?
Oh my goodness. that is like a really tough question to ask, but I am, I think a reformation. I think the whole institution needs to change. And I speak from a place of working with police officers to break down stereotypes and build connections between officers and young people. But I oftentimes feel that it takes more than one training or one day in an academy with the community. But this it needs to be ongoing work. I think that all of us are aware that there are really great police officers out there. That is not the question. But the institution itself is built on racism. And because of that, the whole institution needs to change. I'm also a fan of police officers being from the city or living in the city because, like I think Joan talked about it, knowing the community, knowing the individuals that you are working with, seeing them as people, as human, that is so important. And oftentimes I feel like officers from outside of the city come in with preconceived notions about who these people are based on what they've seen in the news and what they've seen on the media, and don't give an opportunity to get to know the individuals within the community. So I feel like there needs to be reformation. And then I also feel like money needs to be allocated to programs that actually prevent individuals from committing crimes. And so, I don't know, that's just my personal take on it.
Hmm. We do have Rich. You want to, is that George? You want to jump back in, George?
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking when she was talking, you know, during that time, during the 60s and early 70s, you know, when policemen got off duty, for instance, they would come, like I said earlier, and frequent the establishments along Clarissa Street, Jefferson Avenue, and we saw them out of uniform as well as in uniform. So, you know, that gave me a different view that they really are human.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get to one phone call, and Rich is back with us on the line. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, Evan. How are you doing?
Pretty good, sir.
First, as I listen to George, I find his story sad because I hear of a family that was industrious, entrepreneurial, and building a heritage that was just destroyed and wrecked right in front of their eyes. That's just a comment I just have to make, and I'm sorry that happened to your family, George.
Thank you.
I wonder if the youth, as they hear these stories, what connections are they building to today's world outside of the police brutality? I'm talking about, like, the economic connections, how gentrification, even now that's happening in the Clarissa Street area, is actually a vestige of what happened in the 60s and 70s. Have the young people been able to make that historical connection and, from that perspective, get a better understanding of what's going on and why the poverty and why the opportunities or the dearth of them is so persistent? Have in their study, have they made that connection?
Yeah,
it's an understanding of why the world is happening and what's happening to them today.
It's a great question, Rich. Nino, do you see connections between maybe the 60s, 70s, and today with those issues that Rich is talking about?
Yes.
Shantara, do you see the TE youth ambassadors sort of making those connections and maybe learning from history, so we see that some of the things that are happening now are not just new to them, that there's been decades of this?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think Clarissa is just a really great example of a community of people of color primarily being caged in and boxed in, and somehow through some type of resiliency, finding a way to thrive and to create a sustainable economic community amongst themselves, and then having the government come in and totally destroy that and take that away from them. You hear these stories throughout history, Tulsa, where communities of color created sustainability amongst themselves because they aren't allowed to go different places, and then those communities being destroyed. And I think when George talks about urban removal, that's just a prime example. Almost every location that the young people learned about had to be moved, and that's from doctor's offices, different practices, to the clubs, to grocery stores, and all of them had to be moved to different locations because of urban renewal. And so they definitely created that connection, and I think we have to be careful oftentimes of we look back with nostalgia because Clarissa Street did an awesome job of creating a sustainable community amongst themselves, but we have to also be aware that the reason they had to do that was because of all of the racism and discrimination that existed in organizations and corporations like Kodak and Xerox and Bausch & Lomb and Eastman, saying that they won't hire African-American people unless they are janitors, and then forcing them to only live in two locations in our city, the 7th Ward and the 3rd Ward. Our young people are very much aware that this was done on purpose, and as a result had limited opportunities. I think the difference when we talk about Clarissa Street being a diverse community.
Yeah. Hey, Shan?
Yeah.
That music means we have to stop you, and I don't want to stop you, but I'm going to tell people that they've got to see the documentary that T.E. and Shantara's team have been involved with. That is next Friday, August 21st, 6:30 at thelittle.org. Shantara and Nino from T.E., thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
George Fontenet, always an honor, sir. Thank you very much.
Nice
Rob Megan Evans saying have a great weekend.